Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Peter Welch, I have recently interviewed Congressman Chris Gibson. He's a Republican. He is in basically an, a somewhat adjoining district to you over in, he's in New York, you're in Vermont. And what I'm hearing is incredible praise for you from, you know, a middle-range Republican towards one of the most progressive congressmen in the nation. Do you reciprocate those views?
Well, I do. I mean, Chris is, he's been a wonderful partner. And, you know, we worked together initially on trying to help our districts recover from Tropical Storm Irene. And, you know, the two of us were co-founders of the Irene Caucus because his district and my district, all of Vermont, were hit really hard. And we needed to get help in order to be successful to get the aid back to our district. So we worked together and created the Irene Coalition. And then on farm issues in general, we've got common interest. And what we did was what I think most everyday people do when they've got a problem and they've got somebody else who's in a similar situation. They don't worry about where they disagree. They find ways where they do agree because working together, their prospect for success is much greater. So Chris and I worked hand in glove on Irene assistance. And then now we're working very closely because both of us believe that the U.S. government should not get involved militarily in Syria. And we think it's a very unwise idea. And Chris, of course, has got immense credibility as a colonel with over 20 years of experience, including combat experience in Iraq. So he's a great partner for me in having the two of us, one Republican, one Democrat, making the case for the U.S. to, A, stay out of military involvement, Syria, and B, insisting that if there is going to be any military action, Congress can't be a bystander. It has to be actively involved in the debate and the decision of whether to commit American dollars and American forces.
There is this thing now in Congress going around called no labels, meaning stop thinking of us as Democrats and Republicans. Let's get together on policy issues, which we're not doing enough. Is that a phony sort of thing to protect congressmen for saying, OK, I'm trying to get along? Or is it for real?
No, it's for real. I mean, you know, most Americans look with complete dismay at Congress because, in fact, Congress is not getting the job done. And Congress, that's terrible. We're not making decisions. We're at stall speed, and that's bad for America. And there's just, from the perspective of everyday Americans, we're just fighting and not problem solving. And that, in fact, is true. And we have no right to have a Congress that doesn't serve the American people because this institution does belong to them. But there's a lot of rank-and-file members on both sides of the aisle who are hearing, as Chris and I are hearing, from our constituents, why don't you guys get together and get something done? So the problem solver group, it really ranges the spectrum. It's about 81 members, but it ranges from very conservative to very liberal members. But the thing we have in common is a belief that our responsibility is to at least find where we do agree and make progress on that and not simply spend all our time repeating where we disagree.
Now, you're a very popular guy. I know in your state, I talk to everybody. They love you. You're going to win again. You're going to say, oh, come on, Alan, you know, there's always elections. There's always things are close, but you're going to win. Now, a guy like Chris Gibson, who I admire very much, he's going to have the fight of his life going on because it's a very competitive district. I can understand wanting to be in no labels if you can grab off a few people from the other party. But what's in it for you?
Well, you know, most people who serve here, would feel much better at the end of the day if we actually were getting something done. And I think Congress is broken. And one of the major areas of effort on my part is to try to find ways to make it work again. And there's not a lot of magic in what needs to be done to make it work. I mean, members have to be willing to find common ground. They have to focus on where they agree. And compromise can't be a four-letter word. And, you know, you can do that if you actually have principles that you believe in. You have to have the commitment to act on your principles, not just talk about them.
What if it'll cost you your office? I mean, let me put it this way. Chris Gibson is going to have an opponent who is extraordinarily well self-funded. We know that. Aren't those guys going to get very angry at you, a Democrat, for helping a Republican by being his friend?
Well, see, my job is to, I represent Vermonters. My obligation is to them. And I got to tell you that when I talk to Vermonters and I say I've got a Republican co-sponsor on a piece of legislation, that makes them reassured. It doesn't make them angry.
No, but I'm not talking about them. I'm sure you're right. I'm talking about the party guys who come and say, hey, this is disloyal. You may help this guy win.
You know, as I said, my obligation is not to that party guy. My obligation is to the Vermonters I represent. And it's clear to me that if I can create coalitions with other members, conservative Democrats or Republicans, on an issue that, if we succeed, is good for Vermont, then that's the bottom line. And some of the political figures who might get upset that I'm consorting with a Republican, you know, that's just not my problem.
Can I ask you a question, which I know, as always, you'll answer straight out? Has anybody leaned on you not to do this?
No, they haven't. And I think it's partly just because my style and approach since I got here has been to try to approach things in a bipartisan way. But it does happen. I mean, it does happen. It happens on both sides of the aisle. And, you know, that's where we get in our own way. The campaign will take care of itself. But when we're here working in Washington, I think we ought to be just laser focused on trying to get things done. And frankly, if we get some things done, I think the politics will sort themselves out. And it'll be good for all of us. If we just have this endless campaigning and we're just doing, quote, messaging legislation, people throw their arms up and they're disgusted with all of us.
Okay. So I want to switch subjects for a minute now and talk to you about the new head of the Fed. You know, it's a very powerful position. We hear that Larry Summers, the former president of Harvard, who had to leave because of the way people perceived him on women, and apparently a favorite of the president, a guy who with immense experience, but who doesn't have a great public image. I'm wondering where you are on that one.
Well, the president's got the prerogative to appoint who he wants, and when he met with the House Democrats the other day, his focus was not on the personalities. His focus was on the mission of the Fed. And the mission of the Fed is there's two jobs. One is to keep inflation low. And that these days is not hard. You could just randomly get somebody off the street and make them Fed chairman, and they'd be able to manage that one. The second job is the one that's really tough, and that's to get unemployment down. And what the president is saying is that he is going to select a person who's on his page when it comes to having the economy work for everyday Americans, middle-class Americans. And that's all about trying to get that unemployment down, get the wages up. So whoever the president picks, we want to have real ability, skills, and commitment to rebuilding an economy that works for the middle class.
But doesn't the chair of the Fed have to have a sort of charisma, a persona to be? I mean, even Alan Greenspan, who was dour, we got a kick out of him because he always said things. He talked like Casey Stengel. You could never understand him. It was fun to listen to. Doesn't that leadership component mean something?
Well, it's generally the chair of the Fed has had a kind of sober, almost academic kind of demeanor. And obviously, the personality skills and leadership skills in the Fed are important, but it's not a political leadership style position. I mean, it's a very quiet one, and generally, I think what you have to have is a person who's got solid judgment and economic experience in the use of the tools of the Fed.
Have you been a fan of Ben Bernanke?
I have. I actually have. I think, you know, he since he became Fed and after the collapse, before that it was a little different, but after the collapse, I actually give him credit with taking aggressive and very decisive action that has helped mitigate the worst consequences that were out there. And, you know, in a lot of ways, Congress has been spending an awful lot of time just arguing about things and not taking effective action. And when you look at Bernanke under the Fed, in fact, you know, as bad as our economy is, and it's still really, really tough for middle-class families, the unemployment rate has come down somewhat. The financial sector obviously has stabilized and is roaring back, and prices have certainly been stable. So, you know, my view is that Bernanke is going to be judged well for his efforts post-crisis.
our great friend, Congressman Peter Welch, Democrat of Vermont at large, in office since 2007. Peter, I always look forward to our conversations because you bring real clarity to them, and I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.